Yo, what is up? You have found We Like the Blazers. I am your host, Ryan Witty Whitledge. And on the other side of this beautiful computer screen on this lovely Monday afternoon is one Mr. Brandon Goldner. Goldner, what's up? How you doing?
Yo, Ryan, what's going on? I'm good, man. We did some, got some work done today. That was good. Returned a curtain that didn't fit because, you know, new house stuff. So that was good. Mm-hmm. And got a shower curtain liner because that's always good. What else did we get? We got a couple plants, got a bag of dirt. You know, I'm living the dream, Ryan. I truly am.
Isn't it stupid the number of things that as a kid you never realized like needed to be purchased? Like shower curtain liners. Like I just had a whole deal with my kids like a month ago where like I went up to go put something in their bathroom and I noticed their shower curtain liner was like half off and I'm like, what the heck? And I realized the thing's like all ripped and I was like, what happened? They're like, oh, you know, it's old. And I was like, say something. They're like, well, the shower curtain's still good. We're like, no, the shower curtain is a useless decorative feature in this whole process. It's the liner that's the important thing. So it's just
really
funny,
the
like,
liner.
Like things you never realized as a child that like they just appeared there or that they were important with a purpose that you had no clue what the hell that purpose was.
It turns out if none of your windows have coverings on them, then when you wake up and change, everyone else can see you do that. So you have to do that.
That is why I purchased a house right across the street from you. Never mind the binoculars.
That is creepy. But Ryan, I did want to ask you, what do you think about my Blazers wall? If we do upload this to YouTube, which I hope that we do, you will find that I've now decorated it with some stuff and there's a little bit of space I'm going to leave for like maybe my diploma. But yeah, what are your thoughts on a scale of 1 to 10?
It's getting not perfect. There. I need to know who's the man flexing. Is that Joel Prisbilla? Because I'm going to give you a whole bunch of credit if it was the Vanilla Gorilla.
No, although the name starts with the same first letter. So who's another Blazers center whose name started with a J? A hint, he came to the Blazers later in his career. Hint, he was a pretty highly touted prospect and drafted in the early to mid 90s.
Okay, there went that guess.
Last name starts with an H, first name starts with a J.
Why am I blanking on this? This is depressing.
Come on, you can do it! Howard! Okay. Signed, sealed, and delivered, baby. Even an autograph. You know I have that.
He just got fired.
He sure did. It turns out that your pedigree as a player doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be a good coach. Chauncey Billups, I have this like small stack of like signed Blazers photos. You also see another one right. Can I do this right above the Blazers disc golf disc? Is a signed photo of Travis Outlaw, which is pretty sweet too. Got a couple Scoot Henderson cards up there. I have the 2017-18 Blazers behind me. I don't know, look at it. Anyway, I only hope that one day my wall can be as prominent as yours. I think part of mine is it's like it's a little far away and so things look small, but that's okay.
Are you intentionally leaving that space for your head? Like I can just imagine your OCD style enough to where like you came and took a picture and then went back and adjusted everything so that your head was perfectly framed in by the pictures.
Pretty much. I turned on Zoom and I made it full screen. And as I placed stuff, I looked and like, okay, so where's my head going to be? Cause yeah, I mean, you do have to be able to see it. So I don't know. It's a work in progress. We'll see if it develops any further. Ryan, where are we starting today? Wait, one more thing before we get into it.
Okay.
How is your butt?
First trip in the morning was fine. It wasn't until the fourth trip. So I feel as though that the hot sauces were working their way through my system in that order.
And the reason why I ask is we attended a hot sauce tasting competition party challenge at Seth's, Sheriff of PDX's house, which is super fun. Tons of cool people there. Shout out to Kurt, to Gina, to Keith and Abby, to all the other cool people who are Ryan, a different Ryan. Who else was there? There are so many people that we knew and now I'm just blanking on their names. Anyway,
I am so horrible with those events because it is so hard. Like I recognize so many people. And then every about like once a year, like I go to events like this and then I figure out what their Twitter handle is. And I'm like, that is not at all who I thought you were.
I was honestly like, how many of these people have I like pissed off on Twitter?
All of them. That's normally the answer for you. All of them.
Probably. But Ryan, I just want to say I'm so proud of myself and you and everyone else. I'm not good with spicy foods. I went in there and you know this. I was like, I don't know, like I'll, because you were supposed to sign up for how many of the 10 that get progressively hotter that you think you could get through. And I was thinking like maybe six. And you and Keith both, Keith Feltner Smith of the Trailcasters, of course, you were like, just do all 10. We'll eat the ones you can't eat. Ryan, I did it and I did it with the help of milk. And so by the end of that, dude, I was like just full of chicken and milk. Which is not a good feeling.
I turned around at one point and you could have told me that you just stepped out of the shower. You were just dripping. I was
sweating so much.
The worst part. The worst part was, and the massive difference. So for anybody who doesn't know, is that Sheriff, he subscribes to the Hot Ones subscription pack. Yes. And so with every time they'll go through and do a new flavor set, you know, you get that. And so he had a birthday party here like a month and a half ago, and something happened and that Hot Ones box got delayed. So he threw one together. That was a good one. But normally what he'll do is he'll go get little chicky nuggies.
Okay.
And so then you, and just like issue out just like a tiny little dipping sauce cup that has just a little bit, like maybe for like 20 to 30 people, he's not even using half the bottle of hot sauce for each of the things. And for this one, he decided, F it. I'm going to do this again when this box shows up, and we are going the whole way to where he got actual wings and just dumped the whole bottle in each different 10 things and shook them up. So you had them fully coated. And like, I thought I was, no pun intended, hot shit before because of my ability to go through and do these hot sauce challenges at his place.
You were suffering.
Until I realized that the difference between the old way and the way that we did it, it's when the sauce touches your lips, you die.
Yep.
And that is what kept getting me, because that doesn't go away. So like, and drinking milk doesn't necessarily help with that. You can't go wash your lips off because the mixing of the capsaicin and all that and the oil of the hot sauce with water, that doesn't work. That makes it worse. The only thing that I ended up figuring out that worked is taking a beer can that was in the cooler and holding it against my lips. God.
I will say this. What did help me is I wore a glove, which is great that Seth had gloves there you could wear.
And then we smartly moved those to the bathroom afterwards.
Totally. Oh my God. And the other thing I did was with my one gloved hand, I sort of like every time I got a wing, I tried to like break it into components so that I could like get my teeth around it. So I wasn't using my lips. But dude, like I was like 30 minutes of like not being able to talk. Like at some point you were like, hey, do you want to chat about that thing we were chatting about earlier? And I was like, yeah. And then I was like about to start talking. Like, I'm not ready to talk yet. Like,
yeah. It
was
and then you're doing runner stretches outside.
Yeah. I was like, anyways, all to say, Ryan, I have purchased a bidet. I wish I had it the other night, waking up at 4:30, not getting to go to bed until 6 o'clock. At any rate, it was super fun. It was super difficult. How did we start this? I forget. It was just a total non sequitur. Ryan, I'm going to let you, the professional of the group, take us into our Blazers related topic, which is why, of course, people subscribe to us as part of the Rogue Media Network, as part of the Blazers Edge podcast family. We are proud to say, where are we starting today?
So this is not necessarily Blazers related. I'm going to call this a Blazers adjacent topic. So as a fan of basketball, you may know that brackets were released. Selection Sunday was yesterday. So everybody is getting ready for their, I think we can say it as long as we're not using it to advertise. Everybody is getting ready for March Madness now. So we'll find out if they send a cease and desist.
Cops are coming.
Yep. So everybody's getting ready for that. And this is always the time of year that normally it's fun, but now seeing as that the Blazers are a rebuilding team, you're going to start hearing names pop up. Guys are going to be hitting, you know, game winning shots, and you know, everybody's draft boards are going to change based off these next, you know, 3 weeks of this tournament. And that got me thinking about how we should try to watch the March Madness games and how it, knowing that the Blazers are going to be ending up with a high draft pick. And also, and a bigger topic, like is the AAU kind of culture, or like the academy basketball things that are starting to pop up, or now, you know, more G League players that, you know, you don't get to see them in this tournament. Like how that's affected the league and affected development of players. And so okay. My first question to you, Brandon, is, are you a sicko that fills out 97 different brackets?
No, definitely not.
Do you fill out any brackets?
I'll do one a year. It depends. Like Cassie's family has one, by the way. I'm going to give the floor back to you, but I do want to note before you continue that if you had only been at Seth's Hot Ones party, you would have heard a more drunken and hot sauce induced version of this discussion happening.
It was a very delirious discussion between the three of us.
I can't wait for us to get back into it because we both have opinions. But anyway, I just wanted to say that like we have already test drove this topic in a different venue with different people. But anyway, continue.
But yeah, so you're only a one bracket person. Okay, me one as bracket. Well. And I only enter one bracket competition. It's with two buddies of mine. We've done it for years. There's one person that's in this in which every year he just goes straight chalk all the way through. And it's not the worst idea. It just gets a little interesting, obviously, when you're down to your final four, number one seeds on who you end up going somewhere. And that's bitten him in the butt once or twice before. So I have my own strategy to defeat him. That is my entire purpose, is just kick these other guys' asses. I have no desire to even though I'm a Ducks fan and they're in the tournament, I'd love to see them win. But I think I got them going out in, you know, the second round. So that's just how the numbers work. But anyways, but with that, you know, are there any specific players that you have pegged that are coming up that will be playing in the tournament that you would maybe like to try to keep an eye on, or that you've heard of?
I've heard of Olivier Saar.
Who is not going to be playing in the NCAA tournament.
Exactly. So, no, Ryan, I barely have the brain capacity to follow one NBA team, let alone the other NBA teams, let alone players that are not even in the NBA yet. I just don't have the time. So no, I am flying as blind as I could be. I have no opinions, no knowledge, very ignorant.
It's weird because if you look down, and this is why I kind of wanted to talk about the, you know, G League teams or the academy teams and AAU and how that affects the NBA. Because if you look through I'm pulling off Tankathon right now for, you know, the mock board, you know, Saar, international player. They got him number one. I'm not even going to try. That is Zachary Richard. Sure, we'll go with that. Projected number two, Nikola Topic. Sure, whatever. International player. Then you have one, two, three players in four, five, and six that go to Kentucky, and Colorado. And then you get down to G League. So, first question that I want to ask you, well, I guess second question now, is, how much then do you keep up with any of the G League or the Academy teams and the names that are coming out of them? And what draws you to watching these players, or like what puts them on your radar?
Not very closely at all, / not at all. There's very little that could put a particular player on my radar. What I'll say, so that's to directly answer your question, but then I want to give a second answer. My understanding of the dynamics of you know, pre-NBA players, whether they're from college, the G League, international, my understanding from them only comes after they enter the NBA. And then I go back and look. So I don't profess to be someone who knows a whole lot about people coming in the draft. So this is setting up in the future of this discussion in the next minute or two, when I have an opinion that's strong and be like, why do you have an opinion about that? You shouldn't, because you don't want to talk about it. It's because I do go back and look at players, particularly if they play for the Blazers. But that's where my understanding of players comes from. It's once they're in the league and established, I often will then go back and be like, how did they start? Like, I'll just, you know, you fall down those YouTube rabbit holes, you get interested. Like, I wonder what their Draft Express profile was when they came into the league, because they don't have the shot now. Did they ever? It's that kind of stuff. So not at all until they enter the league, and then I'll go back.
No, but what about in regards to Scoot Henderson? So Henderson,
same thing, right? Once he was drafted by the Blazers, then go back, look at the G League Ignite stuff. What kind of player is he like? And actually that's not totally true. I did do a teensy bit of film work once the Blazers were secured once they've secured their position in the draft lottery, then I got interested. It'd be the same way this year, right? Like if the Blazers somehow jump up and get like, I mean, they don't have to jump up that far really, but like, so yeah. I probably will actually do some film work on like the top 4, 5, 6 guys. But like, so yeah, that I did look at film of him before he was drafted, but it was only after the Blazers got the third pick, to be honest.
Okay. And then, so now the Blazers actually have two players that were firsts for them. Anfernee Simons was the first player selected out of IMG Academy. And that was before the G League started paying players a, I don't know if we want to call it a decent salary, but
a stipend.
Yeah. A stipend per se. Although I believe Scoot Henderson had a decent little payday with his, when he signed over, I just read this. Okay. Yeah. So when he signed with the G League Ignite, because again, he bailed on his senior year of high school and went into the G League early. He signed a 2-year, $1 million contract with the Ignite.
Pretty good.
So you kind of see it as like, and he was a highly touted big name player in high school. And, you know, then all going through last year leading up to the draft, I mean, heck, ESPN even had, you know, their little showcase games and whatnot, where he went up directly against Victor Wembanyama. And when he came over here and played for the Metropolitans, you know, all that kind of stuff. But, you know, Blazers have Anfernee Simons and they have Scoot Henderson that have come from these alternate paths that aren't necessarily going through college basketball. And I feel like with both of them, we've seen a similar thing where they're coming in without they're not coming in as polished. And I feel,
oh, here we go.
I need to know,
Ryan, I can see you getting your bifocals and and those kids aren't coming in as polished.
Well, it's weird to say, because, you know, you think of college basketball and you especially think of one and done. And so like you're saying, okay, well, if a player's going, you know, straight from high school, or he's going from an academy to the league, or he's going from high school to the G League, you know, how much extra polishing is he getting? And there's two high level quotes that I just want from some slightly respectable basketball names that may or may not be familiar. And the first quote, I'll read you the quote and then tell you the name. The first quote was talking about AAU basketball and the kind of culture that it's developed. And by the way, I'm lumping AAU basketball into with the kind of G League and the academy stuff, because it all tends to lead towards like the circuit style play of the game. You know, as structured as college basketball or the NBA. But first quote, horrible. Terrible AAU basketball. It's stupid. It doesn't teach our kids how to play the game at all. So you wind up having players that are big and they bring it up and all they do is just this fancy crap ISO one-on-one. They don't know how to post. They don't know the fundamentals of the game. It's stupid. It's ruining it. That quote brought to you by Mr. Kobe Bryant. Kind of very respected league or name in the league. The other thing that ends up with this, LeBron James said in an interview, he goes, I think exhibition basketball. So he wasn't just picking AAU. He was picking some of these other things. I think exhibition basketball has something to do with a lot of the physical damage that you see in our players. It has a few tournaments where the kids, you know, they've had 5 games in one day and that shit's just out of control. There was a case study and it was talking about the causes and kids' bodies already being broken down and how they attributed to that exhibition style and that showcase style of basketball and how many games that, you know, these tournaments are having, all for, you know, various financial benefits. All of it is just to build a name and a brand and not teach the game. I'm very conscious for my own son because that's all I can control. And if my son says that he's sore or tired, he's just not playing. That is LeBron James.
Okay.
So two highly respected names in basketball that kind of crap on this exhibition style and where it doesn't teach enough and it's kind of just a for-profit and just to make yourself a one-on-one.
Oh yeah,
name
and colleges
brand
are definitely not for-profit, as we all know.
Okay.
They care about the integrity of the game, Ryan. They care about amateur student athletics, don't they?
I will concede that argument to you. The NCAA tournament, which is what I feel as though the entirety of the college basketball season builds up to, is a multi-billion dollar one-month exercise. And
I feel like I'm barely able to hold back the hot take that I want to rebut your opinion with, but I also don't want to stomp over your segment. So let me know when you're ready for me to just explode. And I'm
go,
ready. To
you can go, and, go ahead and explode. I got to catch my breath. I just read two quotes. This is the most amount of reading I've done in like 3 weeks. Like my brain hurts. Just go
collectively
ahead.
We've done more research for this show than we've ever done in our entire lives, because Ryan, you know what? This is not 1966. You don't have Lou Alcindor going to UCLA and being relegated to the freshman team because he wasn't eligible to play on the actual college team because they wanted to teach their kids the fundamentals before they went out. Like, okay, it's 2024. We live in an era now where basketball players have more power, more autonomy, more individual control than they've ever had, right? Again, and I'm not just saying 50 years ago, but even 30 years ago, 20 years ago, there was a different balance of power, particularly in college, but a different balance of power towards the organization, towards the team, towards the coach, and less towards the player. So I think, and this is what we talked about too over the weekend at Seth's house, to me, this is less, we're less talking about like AAU and G League versus college. And we're talking less about like college is more structured. It gets players more prepared, and G League and AAU circuits and stuff like that leave players less prepared. To me, this is more of a universal shift towards catering towards players. And you do see that in college too. And to be fair, and I'll stop in a second, but like, to be fair, college coaches, their careers are predicated on how well they can recruit players. As time goes on, as we shift towards more players having more autonomy and more power, you do see coaches catering more to the players. You have college programs that explicitly say, come to our program. We'll make sure that you are a one and done player who gets drafted as high as you can in the NBA lottery. They're essentially a circuit for players to showcase themselves already. That's not every team, but that is definitely some of them. And that's what we're moving to. So my point is this: to me, it's less about AAU and G League versus college. And it's more about, we are just the as the balance of power tips more towards players, which in general is a good thing, I think, then we're going to see a de-emphasis of the team and the coach, and more emphasis of the individual. That's my opinion anyway.
See, a part of what I think makes, or that leads me to think that the college game is better at preparing players for the NBA is, well, I do agree that yes, a coach's lifeblood is completely dependent on his ability to recruit and get top name prospects. And he does that by saying, hey, look, here's how many guys I put in the NBA. I mean, heck, even Nick Saban did that with Alabama football. He can walk into a living room and he's like, hey, if you play for me for 3 to 4 years, I guarantee you're going to win a national championship and you're going to be playing professional football after the fact. But even with all that and knowing that, I think that because the school names and the school brands and the blue bloods in those college programs, because those names themselves, the Dukes, the North Carolinas, the Kentuckys, the Kansases, you know, all of those, because those organizations and or those colleges themselves have such a national brand, there is more emphasis put on teaching a team basketball style and going through and getting players that can play a proper way and not just an absolute crap ton of ISO ball or showcasing. I mean, like a big thing that you see in a lot of these, you know, academies or whatever, is it's just a way for, you know, it's, hey, this is going to be a highly touted, you know, NBA draft prospect. We need to showcase him as much as possible. A lot of times to the detriment of the other four guys that are on the floor. I think Scoot's numbers were actually probably a little inflated with his time in the G League.
Well, definitely. They definitely were,
you know, and even so with that, I mean, like he played a grand total of 29 games. That's less than a college season. You know, he had 10 games in his first year because of injury, but he still walked out of there with only 15.6 points per game, 5.7 assists per game, 5 rebounds per game, you know, 15, 5, and 5. That'd actually be pretty stellar for being an NBA rookie point guard, but you're seeing a lack of fundamentals that he's been picking up throughout the year that I think probably would have been there had he done a year in college.
Maybe, or maybe that the dude was 19. And my question to you is like, what's so wrong?
Is everybody else in college?
Yeah. Okay. Here, first of all, your premise needs data. If what you're saying is that players that come out of college are more fundamentally sound than players that come from the G League, or I don't know where, you know, like, if that's what your argument is, you need to support it with data. I don't think you have the data, Ryan. That's first of all. Second of all, you have a ton of players coming from international teams. Some of those teams are very team oriented. Some of them showcase players. I'll tell you, the team that Victor Wembanyama played on, Victor Wembanyama, I should be able to pronounce his name, they showcased him. It's not like he was in this, like, oh yeah, totally team first environment. Like, there was some of that, but they absolutely showcased him. They knew that they were there to make sure, and they chose that specific team in order to make sure that he got to the NBA, and it worked. Good for him. But the last thing I wanted to say was, I forgot what I was going to say. So that's awesome. It's a great thing to do when you're so, yeah, I like, oh, sorry. I remember it, and I'll let you go. What is so wrong with letting NBA teams take on the burden of that development? That's what you see with Scoot Henderson. Now, the development that maybe, you know, 20, 30 years ago would have happened in a very team first, coach dominated college environment, that development is now going to come in the NBA with NBA players in an NBA system in the team in which he's playing. You could say that this is an advantage for him. So those are my points.
I completely agree with your question of what's wrong with letting an NBA team, handle this development stuff, you know, and it's also for one, a big part of the reason why we're kind of happy that the Blazers have their own G League team, because when a team runs its own G League 100%. Team, you know, you can kind of get, you know, do more hands-on with this developmental stuff in that case. But the reason that, the only thing that I have to counter real quick to that question would be, I'm already seeing talk and chatter and discussions and all that and writings and whatnot, trying to debate on if Scoot's a bust because he was a number three pick.
Because people are impatient.
Exactly. So there's the answer to your problem. Because if you draft this unfinished product and you say, like, okay, we're going to finish him ourselves, we're going to focus on his development to the best of our abilities, that doesn't necessarily land all that well with fan bases half the time. And that's not our problem, though.
Like, if people want to be dumb about that, that's fine. I mean, look, the Blazers are playing the Chicago Bulls tonight, right? In like 1 minute, which I'm doing the recap for, which is why we have to jump off soon. But like, Coby White, I hate to tell this to people, but Coby White having like a sub all-star year, right? In his fifth year in the league, Coby White drafted in 19. And so I'm telling people, like, to see Scoot Henderson actually like pop, we might be waiting until like 2027, bro. But that's what happens when you draft someone who's a literal teenager. So if people have the patience for that, that's their problem. But like, I guess like, if what you're saying is that, oh, I, Ryan Whitledge, I yearn for the days when student athletes would go to college and have to listen to their coach and have to run in a system and all individualism sucks. Like, if that's what you're saying, I just disagree with you. If, however, what you're saying is that the way in which players develop is changing, I do agree with that. I just don't think it's like a college versus G League thing. I just think it's a more global universal shift. That's all.
Now, on that, I mean, you touched on Victor Wembanyama earlier, and Adam Silver, I believe, over the All-Star break had made, you know, he kind of gives his, you know, state of the league kind of, you know, address. And he had made a comment where he was pointing out that overseas, and you were seeing a lot of international players that, such as Wembanyama, such as Luka Doncic, such as Nikola Jokic, you know, where, heck, in Jokic's case, it just suddenly he was 14 and big and they put a basketball in his hand and now suddenly he's the best basketball player on the planet. But like, seeing how those
helps to be a basketball savant and 7 feet tall.
Yeah. And like horses, but unrelated on if the
he does love horses. Helps. Let's just make that clear.
But yeah. So like, what is the international basketball world or sports world? What are they doing differently that we can take over here to kind of accomplish Silver's stated goal of like wanting to better have these, you know, these fundamentals and these trainings and all that to get these players up to the level that we're now starting to see that some of these international players surpassing on when they come into the league?
Wait, sorry, can you?
Yeah, sorry. That was a rambling question. What do you think that why is the International Basketball Association, whatever, why are they so much better at developing their players than what America seems to be able to do?
Because in America,
we literally only have this, the three developmental options for up and coming. It is going to college. It is AAU / the exhibition leagues kind of thing. And it is, you know, these are going into the G League. That's it. So what is
the international I reject the premise of the question. I don't think that international, quote unquote, is like better at developing players. What I think we're seeing is that because basketball has become a global sport, has been a global sport. That second point is most important, has been a global sport. You see kids in different countries are taking up basketball earlier than they used to. It's been popular in the United States for a longer time than it has in some of these countries. I think what we're really just seeing is the very natural distribution of talent across the world. And the talent is catching up to what you would normally see in like a more regular mathematical distribution because countries are into basketball more than they used to. I really think it's that simple. So like, I don't think it's that they're doing any better. Like,
you don't think that there's anything to be gleaned from their style or anything like that.
I'll be honest. I don't. So here's my really honest answer. And boy, this is not something you want to say when you host a podcast. I don't know. I don't know enough to know. It doesn't feel to like, but to me, like to say, hey, we have, if again, tell me if I'm mischaracterizing you. If what you're saying is we have more international players and the ones that come in seem well prepared, therefore they're doing it better. I don't agree with that. I don't have enough information to agree with that. It seems much more likely that it's like, no, it's that people are picking up basketball sooner. So you have more talented people coming over. And oh, by the way, it's a way bigger risk and a way bigger pain in the ass to declare for the NBA draft and come to the United States from a different country. So if you're going to do that, you better be ready. Right. And so I think there's some of that too, where it's like the players you see are going to be more polished. There are tons of players that play internationally their whole life who never make it in the NBA, right? Like, it's not like those players don't exist the same way as players who play in the G League or in college don't play in the NBA. They don't make it, right? I mean, that's always a thing too. So like, I don't know, like I personally, like, again, like I'm getting hung up on this, but like, I don't know of anything specifically happening overseas or happening in college that makes players like better prepared. I don't agree. How dare you? Like, and how dare you try to change my mind? I'm so upset with you right now.
I'm okay with that. I'll live with that.
So let me ask you this. Go ahead. Yeah. No,
ask away.
So if I'm hearing you right, what you're saying is in part, if you go to college, you will be better prepared for the NBA and you'll have a better chance at having an NBA career. Is that the argument that you're making?
Yes, it is. And the reason that I am making that argument is I don't know.
You're in the pocket of the Pac-2, aren't you? You're just a shill for colleges. That's all you are.
My team's in the Big Ten now, bitch. Screw your Pac-2.
That's true. That's right. I'm an Oregon State fan. He likes the Ducks because he's a loser. What can I say?
Quack, quack. Anyways, I think that you are more likely to have a longer NBA career. I think you are more likely to be better prepared for the NBA. And I think that the transition process from a college game to an NBA game is a lot easier for players, you know, and there's always that, like, you know, the game is slowing down for him. I always feel as though that happens easier with players that have had more college experience. And the reason being is because of it being less of a showcase thing. So you're more likely to continue to develop your fundamentals, continue to develop your team aspect of the game, as opposed to just focusing on individuals' stats, accomplishments, and all that stuff. Does that make sense?
It does. I just think that your argument is a little musty, dusty, antiquated. Like, I think that what you're describing is and was true in a bygone era where players, again, like the best players in the world, literally didn't even get to play on their college team when they were a freshman. They were not allowed to. And they played 4 years of college. The rule used to be that to be eligible for the NBA, that you must have graduated college or the equivalent thereof, right? Like, so it used to be that you had to do those things. And yeah, like, if colleges have the certainty as a coach, as a recruiter, I'm recruiting players. If I know I can build teams that will last for years, how often can you say that in college now? Right? Like, that has fundamentally changed. And so, like, yeah, I think what you're describing used to be true is no longer true. I think the reason why it is not true is, again, basically that we have given players more autonomy, more choice, more power. And you can argue that even affects the NBA game, which it definitely does. And you could also argue that it affects people who come into the NBA. And I think it definitely does. But I don't see it, again, as like a college G League split. I just think that we've gotten, and Keith got mad at me online for saying this is like a labor issue, which I do think it is, even though NBA players are millionaires, but owners are billionaires. This is a balance of power toward labor issue, where each individual now has slightly more choice, slightly more autonomy. And I'm going way off the deep end, but the last thing I'll say before I shut up again is, like, also remember in all of this, the NBA is the premier basketball league in the world. You make the most money, you get the most exposure. It is. And it's a closed ecosystem. You have 30 teams. They just expanded rosters to where I think now what you can have like 16 or 17 if you include two ways or something to that mm-hmm. effect. And so when you do the math, it's
like, you know, 450 or
500, right? 500 people in the world. And so, like, it's this, it's not really like a free market of talent, right? Like, you don't really have a lot of choice as a player. But as we see players getting slightly more choice, I think the things that you're seeing are a consequence of that, good, bad, or indifferent.
Yeah. So, all of that.
I guess I'm saying that, like, I'm a communist, okay? Like, I think that, like, if we had more time, I'd love to get into, like, I mean, well, I'll just ask you really quick. Like, do you think the NBA would be more interesting if players had less power and teams and coaches had more power? Do you think the game would be a more interesting game?
Yes, I do. But then I also don't think it would succeed.
And that is interesting.
It is interesting
because it wouldn't be appealing to, like, the masses.
I always equate it to marketability, and the NFL does an okay job at marketing its players. But then again, their players, you're watching a game, they're in a helmet. You know, most of the time you're going to know a star running back, a star defensive end, maybe a middle linebacker, and, you know, a wide receiver and a running back. You know, those are going to be, you know, quarterback, if I didn't say that. You're going to know like three or four people on a 53-man roster. The Major League Baseball is absolutely horrible at marketing its stars. And they have huge issue. Somehow Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani were on the same exact team last year, and that was not the team that everybody talked about all the time. Anyway, they are horrible at it, and we can see their faces. The NBA, we know the players. We can pick them. We could pick them out of a crowd, and the NBA is absolutely fantastic at marketing its players, which means that it's it's not going to want to put – it would hurt the marketing and hurt that so much to put like an NFL level of control, an NFL team's level of control over the team.
Well, I think that's fair.
Yeah.
You know, it totally does. And like, also sometimes I think to the detriment of people who enjoy basketball, where it's like Steph Curry and the Warriors face LeBron James and the Lakers for the 10th seed. And it's like, holy shit, these guys are in their mid-30s. They're phasing out. Like, can we not, like, it doesn't always have to be like Steph versus LeBron. Now, on the other hand, I also don't want to be like Darvin Ham and the Lakers versus Steve Kerr and the Warriors. I don't want that either. Right.
Yeah.
So like,
but and like that, because the NBA does market things like that, that is also then why you do see such a preference on showcasing an individual talent. If you can make a name, then you can sell it. And that's not
good. So this is coming full circle. What you just said, that is why not just at the G League level, but including college, why players expect to be treated more as an individual, because the Premier League in the world markets you that way. And that's what they want. So that makes perfect sense to me, right? So like, all right, look, we're running out of time because I'm a jerk, but is there anything else you want to hit on before we biggity bounce?
No,
we want to talk about the Blazers for like 1 second. Like, they're facing the Bulls tonight. The Bulls
DeAndre are Ayton going to get the Western Conference Player of the Week. I saw he was finalist.
Only if he gets an air mattress. check out blazers.com for a story.
Now, I need a fucking 30 for 30. Dude, just, you are making $36 million a year. You're going to tell me that you had no clue how to procure a mattress? Like, you can afford to go buy one.
I think that
is going to be the same size, if not bigger, than an air mattress that you can just throw out when your shit gets shipped here.
There's some,
he lives in Vancouver. I could throw a rock and hit five mattress stores.
DeAndre, you might want to look out your window right now. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I think the greater point in that story from Aaron Fentress, the Oregonian, which Blazers Edge and I then aggregated, was that it's difficult to adjust to a new team in a new city, and there's a lot going on, and maybe all of that swirling, including maybe not having a great place to sleep, is what contributed to his early season woes. By the way, he's doing great lately. So yeah, I don't know. Like, the Blazers are doing what they're doing. I appreciate that we took time on this topic because it was like, I don't know, it's interesting. It's another way to think about basketball, and I think it's interesting. So
yeah. I will.
Any other final thoughts?
Yeah, one final thought here, real quick, and before we bail. Brandon, are you a multimillionaire?
No.
Neither am I. What was the very first thing that you moved in the first night of your house when you bought it?
It was the bed.
Yeah, it was the bed. That's the first thing I moved into. I know. So I'm ending on that. That's all I got.
Look, maybe the movers got caught. Who knows? But if you want to learn more about that, you can always do that at WeLikeTheBlazers.com, part of the Rogue Media Network and the Blazers Edge podcast family. You can also find us at WeLikeTheBlazers at basically any podcatcher or on Twitter at LikeTheBlazers. You can also find him, Ryan Whitledge, at TheWittyRyan. And I hate to say it, man, you might be able to find me back on Twitter at some point, but we're not going to talk about that right now. Not going to talk about it right now, but until next time, I appreciate you all. I'm Brandon, that's Ryan, and go Blazers.
Go Blazers.
I went too fast at the end, but that's okay.